Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 349, live from the Mobile Podcast Command Unit in Los Angeles, California, parked in a driveway. Got the doors open. It's kind of like being outside, but I'm not outside. And I'm a little disconcerted because this thing is parked on an incline. And so I'm kind of, if I lean too far, I'll fall over. And it's kind of windy out and papers keep flying around. So this has been a little bit of a chore today, just getting ready for this podcast. And I wanted to do an update podcast for the weekend because I haven't done an update podcast this weekend. A lot of the most recent podcasts have kind of been travelogues. And one of the things that I said I was going to do when I took this thing on the road was I was going to resume being able to do the kinds of update podcasts that I do at home because I've got the printer and I can read information. I can do what I usually do at home on the road. So I've kind of been testing that theory. It's a little disconcerting because everything is all over the place. I got stuff in the house and I got stuff in the truck and I've got back and forth and everything else. The other thing is life in Los Angeles can be a little challenging because we went to the Costco today, and my God, I have never seen so many people in a Costco, even on a Friday in Minnesota before in my life. Just long lines, and people wouldn't get out of the way, and it's just no wonder people here... First of all, no wonder people here stay in their houses, because going out becomes a huge chore, not to mention the traffic and the hills and everything else. I understand why, but you know, I hate to say this, but it's true. I almost can't wait to get out of here. I mean, it's like I haven't hardly gone anywhere and I can't wait to get out of here. It's kind of a weird energy. And speaking of weird energies, this is a big eclipse weekend this weekend. It's big for the astrologers. It's big for the religious. At 3:16 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, April 4th, which, and by the way, the eclipse is going to be most visible from the Pacific Coast, which is kind of cool that I'm here, and I'm in a great place to be able to view it because I'm up in the hills, so that's kind of neat. This is called the Blood Moon, and I believe it's also a supermoon, so this is a really significant astrological or astronomic event. Earth's shadow moving across the face of the moon. The red tint that you're going to see is caused by the Earth, simply caused by the Earth blocking the sun. It's not sackcloth. It's not the end of the world. It's just an event that happens more than once and quite often. And this is the red light from the rim of the Earth beaming onto the moon, transforming it into a giant red orb. And we're going to talk about that in this podcast. We'll talk about Iran, which is the quote agreement or deal, which it isn't with Iran that was announced in the last 24 hours or so. This Indiana situation and the unemployment and more in podcast 349 live from Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8 in Los Angeles, California on the big road trip for the Bob Davis Podcasts in 2015. Well, as you know, the Bob Davis Podcast has been sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating for quite some time. And I, you know, Greg, Ryan and I go out and hang out a lot. And I always ask him when we go hang out, hey, what do you want me to talk about in the podcast's ads that I'm doing for you? And the thing is, obviously, I'm in L.A., so we can't hang out. In fact, he texted me a couple days ago, and he was like, let's go get something to eat. And I was like, well, I'm actually in L.A. right now. But the last time we were out, I said, what do you want me to say, you know? And he said, you know, make sure you tell people that Ryan Plumbing and Heating really takes care of people on emergency service. We get a lot of calls for emergency service, so that's kind of the focus of this ad for Ryan Plumbing in this podcast. Whether it's your furnace, water heater, frozen pipes, you know, other winter-related plumbing problems, especially after winter is over, sometimes these problems emerge after the weather. Here's what I want you to do. Think Ryan Plumbing and Heating, and because they can take care of you with emergency service. When you have problems, you want reliable service, and that is Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, because they've been there for four generations. In St. Paul, you call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs, too, for four generations, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Think of it as a sticker on your mind for the next time you have emergency plumbing problems. problems I've mentioned. You know, when you have those problems, it's usually during a dinner party or something, and you're always so surprised, and then you don't know who do I call? First of all, how do I turn the water off? And the next question is, who do I call? You call Ryan, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Once again, metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too, for four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. Yeah, I kind of leave the impression that this is the only road trip in 2015, and if this thing works out well, which I see no indication that it won't now, there's going to be more than one road trip in 2015, and I'm debating whether to number them. So I guess this is road trip two, because road trip one was last year in the fall when I went out to Arizona. So this is really road trip two, as opposed to the big road trip in 2015. So yeah, we were talking about the blood moon. Lots of superstitions regarding the blood moon, whether you are part of the new age sort of astrological tarot card coexist kind of thing, or whether you are religious. There are some interesting developments regarding this. Lots of superstitions. And as I said before, I think if you think about it, as we see shadows moving across fields from clouds on a hot, sunny day all the time, right? Or we see plane shadows traveling across the ground, both in the plane if you look down, and sometimes you see them flash by rather quickly if you live close to an airport. This is the Earth's shadow passing across the moon. There's really nothing more to it. And of course, eclipses have always engendered these kinds of superstitious types of reaction. The big one is that this blood moon is going to usher in all sorts of terrible, apocalyptic events. And if you want some debunking on that front, Jerry Boyer, who I've actually interviewed before, who's a financial guy, did a great piece debunking the superstitious religious. And his name is spelled Bowyer. He has a podcast and does, you know, financial stuff. But he noted that in the, at least in the religious community, they have sort of got fast and loose with the facts and the dates coinciding with the blood moons. They get confused about the start and the end of World War I. And another point that he makes is they confuse 1945 as a bad year, and because it was the midst of World War II, the end of World War II. And he said, you know, the thing is, it really 1945 is not the bad part of World War II. That was the part where we saw the end of two murderous regimes and the end of the World War and sort of the beginning of a new time and a new paradigm. So I don't know that I would say that it was bad, but that doesn't, you know, entirely sound bad. It's just, you can sort of take any kind of view that you want. I am just going to say, you know what? This is just the Earth's shadow passing across the moon. There's no greater significance than, isn't that an amazing thing? And it is eerie and strange to see that. But again, you know, if you're an ant, it's eerie and strange to see a cloud move across the sun because they don't know. If you were that tiny, you would have no idea that it was simply a cloud moving across the sun, right? You wouldn't know that. So I just point that out because you're going to see lots of stuff about the blood moon and the religious significance of the blood moon, and there's been four of them, and this is a tetrad and all this other stuff about what it means. And to me, that's soothsaying. Even with Christians who say, this is what it means and this is what's going to happen. Having said that, we now move into this Iran deal, which has got me all fired up, and I've talked about it. You know, leading up, I talked about this a couple of times. First of all, the thing that the president announced Thursday afternoon is not a deal. This is an agreed framework for negotiation that may lead to a deal at some point in 2 or 3 months. I believe the deadline for talks to begin again is June. So within 3 months, they will start talking again about some kind of a deal. And I just want to point out that the president himself has said that Iran is 2 months from a nuclear bomb. So they don't even start, if they don't even start negotiating whatever agreement might take shape until June that the president chose to announce now because he wanted to, if they're that close to the bomb, what do you think the chances of them actually having a bomb before June would be, if that's how close they are? The other thing is, this deal doesn't even meet the initial goals of the Obama administration itself. Emerging reports indicate that John Kerry Secretary, Secretary of State, and the President consistently back down from their positions at the beginning of negotiations as the course of the talks continued, as Iran was simply intransigent and threatened to walk away consistently from the talks. The White House wanted to originally persuade Iran to dismantle much of their nuclear infrastructure. Iran just flatly said, no way, that's not going to happen. Even France isn't happy with this quote-unquote agreement, saying that it doesn't go far enough. And it's going to be difficult to verify if and when any agreement is reached and signed. And there's really, because this is an agreement with the executive branch of the United States and the United Nations, it's probably not something that the U.S. Congress can do much about it except stamp their feet and be angry about it. Undoing it also will be difficult for a future president for at least 10 years, because it's a 10-year agreement and we tend to live up to our agreements in the United States. And I should point out that Iran signed a similar agreement in 2004 or so and violated the terms. The other thing that you're going to be seeing is this is just a continuation of the Bush policy, which is not true. I wonder whether Bush would have negotiated this way or not. I guess we'll never know that. It's also being described thusly. We need to do this because an agreement is better than war. And are you a warmonger? Is that what you want? In other words, if you don't like this agreement, then you're a warmonger. So it's a binary choice between war and some sort of agreement or discussion, which is not true. We actually don't have an agreement now, as I said, and we are not at war with Iran. So does not having an agreement lead to war? And it also does nothing, whatever the framework is, does nothing to address Iran's projection and sponsorship of terror groups like Hezbollah and the Shiite groups in Iraq and other places. If you don't like the agreement, you're described as a hothead or someone who won't give peace a chance, regardless of your position, whether you're governor of Wisconsin or, you know, someone in Congress who just simply doesn't agree with this president's foreign policy. There is vast confusion, I think, in the media, or maybe not. Maybe they're not confused about it at all, and they just choose to take this opportunity about talks and diplomacy. Just having talks, I don't think qualifies as diplomacy. Sitting around and talking and coming up with a framework, I don't see how that qualifies as diplomacy. And I don't feel that it qualifies as diplomacy to simply to agree to everything that the other side wants and say, look, we've got an agreement. The modern view of people on the left seems to be these days, and I think you can apply this to a lot of situations in the last 20 years almost, get an agreement, any agreement, just get an agreement and then work from that agreement whether the other side lives up to their end or not, because you've got an agreement of some kind. You've got something that you shook hands on, even if it isn't signed. So even if it's not an agreement, then you have an agreement. The bottom line is we did not have to have this agreement. We did not have to have these talks. We did not have to make these concessions. But the president did, and it's all really about his legacy. He wants something of his own. Somebody made the point, and this is, I mean, it's fair, that he came into office inheriting a foreign policy situation that he had to address. You know, he probably could have had more initiatives on his own, but he chose to continue the policies to a certain extent of the Bush administration. He doesn't have very many accomplishments to point to as president anyway, let alone in foreign policy. And he chose to strike out on his own and have this. And it became more important for President Obama to have this agreement than it was for the Iranians to have the agreement. Therefore, we were at a disadvantage in this. And that is at least my interpretation of it. I think the result will be that the Middle East is going to be further destabilized by this agreement, this quote-unquote agreement, that there will be nuclear proliferation as a result of it between the Saudis and the Turks. And I think it's something that, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Obviously, it goes without saying that with all of these kinds of deals that's the case. But I think trusting Iran to reduce nuclear production and trusting Iran to do anything but what is in Iran's best interests is really naive. And I think this is just another example of the Obama administration getting something and making it look like it's a lot better. And then we're left to argue these things out and chew the fat on these issues for years afterward. It's, you know, a great example is what's going on with Obamacare. You know, one group thinks it isn't working and one group insists that it is, and we're still stuck with it. And I don't even think that if a Republican is elected president with a Republican majority, I'll be surprised if it's repealed. And I've said that at any number of places where I've been speaking, and people are shocked because because they actually believe Republicans are going to repeal Obamacare. We'll see about that. And this is going to be the same thing. These kinds of, this is why an executive branch run amok is dangerous, because you don't get the stability that comes with the legislative branch being a part of an agreement or party to an agreement or passing judgment or advice and consent, shall we say, on a treaty or agreement with a foreign country. You know, presidents need to be able to act independently. I understand that. But I think that President Obama really pushes the limits of what he can and should do, or what a president can and should do when it comes to these kinds of things. I don't think that the quote-unquote agreement, I keep calling it quote-unquote agreement because it's really not an agreement. It isn't even, no one signed anything. It's just they have a point-by-point description of what was supposedly agreed on, but there is no signature on anything. And aside from that, what it, the actual, if you take it at face value of what the agreement actually is or what is written on the paper, I don't think we got a very good deal, even though they're going to say it's a big deal. They're going to high-five and fist bump and talk about how great this is for the president, but that's what he wants to hear. 3, 4, 5 years from now, if it doesn't work, it's going to very significantly affect negatively his legacy. But then that doesn't help us if there's a problem going forward in the Middle East. The second big story this weekend is Indiana, this religious freedom law hysteria that is going on right now. And I know everyone has said this, so I don't have to repeat it, but I will. This law in Indiana is similar to scores of other laws passed as far back as 1993, supported by President Clinton, supported by former Senator Obama, supported by Democrats and Republicans across the board. It is not a Republican effort to discriminate against gays or anybody else. Wisconsin has such a law. My understanding legally is it does not sanction discrimination. It doesn't even allow companies to discriminate against people and use the law as a defense. When governments pass laws that carve out special treatment for certain people, then there is a backlash and governments have to pass more laws to do this. And I'm with Penn Jillette, who said, you know, people should have the right to be stupid and they should have the right to run their businesses in stupid ways. It's just another example, in my opinion, of what happens when the state intrudes in people's lives on one side or another. Watching the debate on this law in Indiana when so many other states have laws like this, to me, is another example of how the left in this country uses incendiary languages and labeling people as bigots as a way to shut down debate on their policies. So the other thing is the economy that's going on this week and this weekend. So let's talk about the economy a little bit. Now, we've been hearing for weeks, and I have not said much about it because, again, I'm continuing to watch. We have been hearing for weeks from the cheerleaders and the purveyors of the rosy scenario that the economy is, you know, just booming. The economy is booming. And, first of all, the economy is not booming. 2.1% or 2.2% growth in the last quarter of 2014 is not booming. And now the Atlanta Fed is actually predicting 0% economic growth for the first quarter of 2015. And as I mentioned, you have all this rosy scenario reporting on the economy, depending on the news outlet. And one of the big ones is that cheaper gas is eventually going to mean that people will start consuming. I hear that all the time. And the one thing I've learned about these economic shibboleths is sometimes they're just not true. It's a truism. Well, if gas is cheaper, then it's going to act like a tax cut and people are going to go out and spend the money. First of all, and I'm going to say this, I think I'm going to start saying this a lot, because I think the challenge for 2016 and going forward is candidates are going to have to really make an effort to come up with some overarching concept to describe policies that really go a long way towards creating stability. We've got to have stability in economic policy. We've got to have stability in foreign policy. We've got to have stability in domestic policy. We can't keep changing, and we can't keep moving in one particular direction all the time. And when it comes to the economy, they keep doing things, and the natural equation is, we're going to do this and it's going to work. And so then it's reported that way. So the government today announced a stimulus program, let's say, equals they're going to kickstart the economy. How many times have you read that? Or the Federal Reserve today announced it will continue quantitative easing equals this is going to kickstart the economy. They don't qualify why they think it will. They don't report that that's not necessarily true or that it's not even proven. It's just this equation that gets formed in people's head, which equals a storyline. We're going to do this, therefore it will work. So whenever a government announces a policy or any kind of a policy initiative, then it equals in the media that it's going to work. It's terrible reporting. It's getting worse every day. And the latest, of course, is that cheaper gas is going to, quote, eventually mean that people will start consuming other stuff. And when consumption starts up again, then we will have this fantastic economy. All we need is consumption. And, of course, there are people that don't agree with that, really what we need to do is be stimulating the supply. In other words, we need to be stimulating business formation and supply formation, and consumption will take care of itself. What is happening out here is that we have slow or no growth, and we have people adapting to slow or no growth in all these different ways. Part-time, cobbling together part-time jobs, one person leaving the workforce and the other one working. So one person stays home to take care of the kids. And if it's the man, then it's the man. Or people are moving to cheaper places, or they're doing everything they can do to save money. And that's what's going on. And then when you have in larger income groups where they have the money to spend on things like houses and cars because they're, you know, writing them off in their business or whatever, they're doing it. So we're not seeing what anyone could call dynamic, consistent growth in this country. And if you are of a certain age, of course, you've lived through a couple of periods of time when you actually saw the difference between that. You know, I grew up in the 70s, and at the end of the 70s, we had some minor economic growth, but we also had high interest rates, and we had inflation, and we had other issues. When they fixed it, you could really tell the difference in the dynamic of life. People were no longer adapting to moribund conditions. They were forging forward out into new careers and new jobs and everything else. Now, the caveat there is that the workforce was younger at the time, although there are 75 million, I think, or more, millennials who constitute a pretty young workforce. So the idea that the workforce in this country is older and that that's why we're having these problems, I don't know if that's even true. Things would be much different in this country with more dynamic growth, and you'd see it across the board consistently, and you would, of course, see it with the addition and the adaptation of high tech and other things, and we're not getting that. It feels like the Matrix. It feels like it's consistently 1999. We seem like we're running in place because what's happening is people are adapting to very slow growth policies, and that does not mean things are getting better. It means people are getting better at adapting to those kinds of situations. And I believe that we have the wrong policies in place to produce that kind of growth. It's not just high taxes. It's also cutting spending. And it's not just low interest rates and things of that nature. It's also cutting the Gordian knot of government and regulation to allow people to start jobs. And then you get this back and forth about how, depending on the statistic, one side will pick one statistic and talk about how great things are. And another side will pick another statistic and just say, oh, by the way, and just this week we saw two groups of statistics. We saw a group of statistics from the, you know, the Bureau of Labor, whatever it is, that releases the unemployment numbers that said it's the best it's been since whenever. And then you see that we only produced 126,000 jobs in March, which is the lowest number since December of 2013. So you'll have to take your pick of which side you would pick to say what's going on. I think we're in kind of a slowdown. I think that we have been either in slow or no growth for a long time, and I don't see how the first quarter of 2015, this year, is going to be much above 1 or 2%. And that's not good. That's not economic growth. That's not success. You know, I would be happy with consistently 3.5% maybe. There's the whole 4% club, but we're going to have 6, 7% economic growth in this country for a number of quarters to catch up with where we were before the recession. That's what's wrong. You know, we've never caught up to where we were, and we've been told, well, it's a new reality. You're just going to have to get used to it. No, I don't think we have to get used to it, and I don't think we have to accept that. It's just a question of what policies they're using and what works. Aside from all that, business reporting continues to be terrible, as always. It's some of the worst reporting that I see. The media has to seize on one positive storyline after another to keep this storyline going that things are getting better, and then you forget the previous storyline has been debunked or disproven. And as I told you, a good example is the total employment thing. What's total employment? That's a great storyline. Well, total employment doesn't factor in the number of people who've left the labor force that they still haven't answered why that's happening. First, it was, well, they're older. Well, not necessarily. So, once again, it's very frustrating how the media treats these stories and spins these stories. And if you're not really paying attention, you're going to miss the stuff that's just staring at you in your face. We're going through a significant change in technology in this country today, more so than we have even 10, 15 years ago. And it's just really picking up speed. And when we see real dynamic growth again, you're really going to see it. Right now, it's like, I always go back to the Depression and the fact that they invented television in 1928 or 29. And we would have had the 1950s in this country in the 1930s if we had not done the wrong thing to react to the financial crisis of 1929. So, and I see lots of things from the road, and one of the things I do see is I see people adapting. You know, I see towns and cities as I'm out here on this road trip, and it's, you know, being at Costco today was really, sort of an eye-opener just in terms of seeing this many people out shopping and doing the things that they do. But I don't see people starving to death, and I don't see this hollow, scared kind of look, and I don't see the desertion that existed at the height of the recession in 2008 and 9. The difference is that we should be seeing a lot more dynamic growth than we are now. So it's one of the observations that I've had. But adaptation and growth are two different things, and I think it's really important to point out. And it's typical of the era that we are living through, an era that I certainly hope, and I think everybody hopes, is coming to an end, where you are cobbling together agreements, initiatives, executive actions, big headlines with little results in the end. And yet, in spite of it all, things are changing rapidly. And we talk about it all the time on this podcast. And the question is whether we have policies and governments in place that are going to allow those changes to take place, or whether the governments and policies are going to be restrictive with, the blocks to progress that force people to adapt too much. What we want is easy adaptation to economic growth, and we want laws and policies that produce real dynamic growth for a long period of time. It's better than no growth. It's better than slow growth. And I think there's a lot of people that say, well, we really need to be taking care of people, and we need to make sure that we don't offend people, and we need to make sure that business lives up to whatever. One of the great pieces I saw today is that people are convinced that businesses make more than they do in terms of profit margin. You know, they think companies make 35% of their profits. Would that it be true? They would be amazed. A lot of companies are living on a very thin profit margin, and that's why it's so important to have economic growth. In the meantime, we are continuing to be ill-served by gotcha and get-it-up-there media, rush to judgment, and outrage media. A good example this week is the crash video that supposedly appeared from the Alps crash that we have yet to see. Everybody was saying, "Well, there's a video of the crash. It's amazing." And I haven't seen anything today of actually seeing it. And what was reported was that people at this outlet in France had seen it, but no one else has seen it. So does the video exist or not? And they jumped all over that. There were all sorts of headlines Monday, when I guess it was Tuesday or Wednesday, that this video existed. And I almost clicked on it. I really don't want to see it, but I almost clicked on it. And I guess if I had, I would have realized that the video actually does not exist at this point. Or the characterization of Scott Walker as allergic to dogs, as though this is, you know, if Scott Walker wasn't allergic to dogs, it would really help his campaign. And he would be seen more human if he had a dog, which is to me, it's just silly. Does that have anything to do with someone's policies or political points? And this is how absurd politics and policy and reality in this country has become. I mean, we can't even agree on what reality is in this country anymore. So the other thing, the other big one is the polls on who's leading the presidential race of 2016 is completely absurd at this point. And I've said that, you know, ignore all those polls. I had to, you know, it's so funny when I said, I think I said a month ago that you just basically need to ignore all of the presidential polls. And sure enough, you know, a month later, somebody writes a piece that reminds everyone to ignore the presidential polls. And this is the reason that I have to turn off media from time to time. First of all, I don't watch it. So it's a question of reading it. And I still read it every day. And, you know, what it becomes for me is I just don't do anything with it. Because, I mean, I still go through and analyze and sort information every day. And at the end of the day, before I do a podcast, I go, yeah, this isn't worth talking about because I think most of the reportage it doesn't really serve anyone except the media. It's just, it upsets people. So it's another reason for the podcast, because what I'm trying to do is curate what is going on without screaming and yelling and pounding and ranting. Some people call what I do ranting. I don't really think it's ranting, and I'm trying to be. I'm trying to be kind to both sides of the political spectrum, but sometimes you can't be because some people on some sides of the political spectrum are really vicious. And so it's really important that people kind of have some kind of tool to put that stuff in perspective. And that's one of the things that I like to do. But it's so funny because I've been here a couple days, been reading and looking at the news and chomping at the bit to do an update podcast for the weekend. And now that I've done one, I really don't want to look at the news again for a couple of days. So I'm getting ready for the blood moon. So live from Los Angeles, podcast 349, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Oh, wait. I have to thank the sponsors, and I have to mention a couple things before I say goodbye. I got to mention that I have to get back to the Twin Cities by April 25th because I'm playing the Chanhassen. I'm going to be there to speak in front of the SD48 Republicans. Lots of fun stories to share from the road, I'm sure, and I will have the podcast mobile command unit there, so that's pretty cool. Got to remind you once again, I can't forget, thanks to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring podcast 349 from Los Angeles. Don't forget, if you have emergency problems, call Ryan for reliable emergency service, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. That goes for the suburbs. Okay, so if you're over on the west side or on the east side, doesn't matter if you live in Maple Grove or if you live in Mendota or if you live in Plymouth, wherever you are in the metro, Ryan Plumbing and Heating can take care of you. 651-224-4771 or 612-927-6488 for four generations in St. Paul. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg Ryan, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. And I got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast. It's been kind of windy here through this podcast, so I got to make sure that I can actually find the little piece of information that tells me. Of course, I know what it is, but right now we're running with one digital sponsor, and that is Mad Cave Studios, which specializes in quality original automotive artwork. Mad Cave does real paintings of cars and trucks, and I think if you have a favorite car or truck or whatever, having a piece of specialized quality artwork is really cool. So check out what they do. That link takes you to the Mad Cave Studios Facebook page, and you know, they'll tell you more about what they do. And of course, if you're interested in digital advertising on the Bob Davis Podcast, send me an email because I can hook you up. It's a good deal. And I think it's a great opportunity. The website continues to grow and the feeds continue to grow. And I don't want to make this a special announcement because it's really not, but I should have another announcement here coming up pretty soon concerning the podcast, which I'm pretty excited about. Anyway, thank you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. And I want to thank everybody for making contributions and donations at the Bob Davis Podcast. I do have the password so I can get to that whole list of contributors to the mobile podcast command ambulance, which I just love. And I'm going to be thanking you guys personally once again. But thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for your donations once again at thebobdavispodcast.com. And now we can end the podcast. Are you with me? Thank you.
you play at midnight. Are you with me? Are you with me? I want to dance by water beneath the Mexican sky. Drink some margaritas by swinging blue lights. Listen to the mariachi.